everybody, and welcome. You're listening to Bhavani and I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so happy to be here with you today on this beautiful Thursday morning. And I have an exciting show again today. Betsy Davidson, the new editor of Long Island's first edible Long Island, is with me today in the studio. And so I'm really thrilled to have her, and I'll tell you more about her in a little bit. I also want to just share with you some of the things going on in and around the city and remind you that if you have events that you'd like me to share with the audience, please send them to me at bhavani@iegreen.com. So the big action is the protest that's planned for February 17th in Washington, D.C. to protest the Keystone XL pipeline. And this is our opportunity to make the change that we want to see and to show our president that we need to take up the climate change and that he needs to uphold his commitment to climate change. And the Keystone Pipeline had over 12 spills in 2011 alone. And that's just in the section that's up in Canada. And it is planned to go from the tar sands in Canada, Alberta, Canada, all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, going through some of the most fragile aquifers in this country, through cropland, and it is guaranteed to have spills because they always do, and it will wreak havoc on our food supply, on our water supply, and it is one of the worst decisions that would happen for climate change. So we really need to let the president know how we feel, and we have organized buses. If you go to the website forwardonclimate.org, you can sign up for a bus in your area. We have a bus going from Long Island, which is almost full. So you can get the website direct link from my website, iegreen.com, and sign up for the bus. We are also organizing a waiting list so that we can decide whether or not to make a commitment for a second bus. And we would love to have a second bus. We'd even love to have a third bus. So please show your support and sign on and join us. And let's, take to the streets and join Sierra Club and 350.org and let our voices be heard. Next week, February 12th, we are also showing a screening of the movie Dear Governor Cuomo, and that's going to be at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. And I saw the premiere screening in New York City of this movie, Dear Governor Cuomo, and it is great. It's all about the destruction that fracking causes in the surrounding areas and into water supply and how it makes people sick. And it's really the truth about fracking. And so it's a great movie. Plus, it has the spirit of Woodstock. It's just, you know, musicians coming together for a good cause. And it's a really wonderful movie. So if you can make it February 12th at the Huntington Cinema Arts Center, we'd love to see you there. If not, Google the movie and find out where it's screening in your area. It's really worth seeing, and we all need to know about fracking. And you have to realize that we're constantly being bombarded by media that has a slant to it, having to do with big corporations and profit and what's good for business and not necessarily what's good for the people. And so we really need to look at everything through different glasses from an environmental standpoint. The American Indians used to have a saying that if something, you know, wasn't good seven generations out, then it's not good for today. And we need to live by that standard. So please look into fracking. It is not good. It is not just creating jobs. It really is a bad thing. So New Yorkers Against Fracking is a great organization. Food and Water Watch is doing a lot around fracking. So please join in. Exciting. Maryland is standing up to big oil and gas lobbies, and they're banning fracking in their state. And so we're hoping Governor Cuomo will do the same. So you can also sign petitions through New Yorkers Against Fracking. And on my website, there's lots of opportunities to sign petitions. Also, the Environmental Working Group has so many great guides in addition to the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen, telling us which vegetables to eat organic. They also have a healthy cleaning guide, and they have come out, you know, showing the how carcinogenic 1,4-dioxin is, and Procter & Gamble is actually reducing the amount of this chemical in Tide, and it is hopefully going to really set the standards and really make some change. But you should find out about this guide. So go to the Environmental Working Group's website and look up their Healthy Cleaning Guide. They also have a great guide on cosmetics. And that's another thing we have to realize, that all these cosmetics, they can say natural and whatever they want, and it's far from natural. There's really no regulation on cosmetics. And especially with the way young parents, you know, throw on sunscreen onto their kids like it's nothing. You have to realize there's heavy-duty chemicals in that sunscreen and in all kinds of cosmetics. So think about your skin as being your largest organ and that it absorbs everything. And so think about what you put on your body and in your body. And so, again, go to the Environmental Working Guide. I can't recommend that website enough. So also a couple other things coming up, February 14th, a free seminar at Columbia Teachers College called Bringing Policy to the Table, New Food Strategies for a Healthier Society. That's from 8 to 12 on February 14th, which is Thursday morning. And I plan on being there. And of course I have my show in the middle of it. So, I'll be able to tell you all about it. So tune in next week. Also on February 16th, TEDx Manhattan is happening. That is a sold out event in New York City called Changing the Way We Eat. However, you can see it live streaming all over the place. So go to the TEDxManhattan.org website and find out where it is being live streamed in your area. I know in my area, the Cinema Arts Center, my favorite art cinema on Long Island, they are live streaming it all day. It's a free event. Come on down to the Sky Cafe, have some food, and watch this movie. And you should know that the Cinema Arts Center does serve organic popcorn and lots of really good organic food. So you can, you know, have some food there and watch this amazing event. There's going to be another event going on simultaneously. While the TEDx Manhattan is going on, talking about changing the way we eat, right next door in the South Bronx, there's going to be another full-day seminar called Not Just Talk, Food in the South Bronx. And this event is still open. There are tickets. Suggested donation is $35, although you can pay what you can. And that is taking place at The Point on Garrison Avenue in the Bronx. And that is going to be really talking about the issues around racism and how it impacts our food movement. You know, we like to think, those of us that are in the food movement, that we are really, you know, open and into equal opportunity and all about food sovereignty and sustainability. But sometimes we really, because if we're coming from a place of privilege, sometimes don't really get how it is for someone not coming from that place. And this is just a conversation to really open up our eyes and help us see how racism impacts the food system and try to do something about it. So lots of good things going on. Of course, the Just Food Conference is still planned to happen March 29th and 30th. So that's worth checking out, and tickets for that do sell out. So if you are interested in the Just Food Conference, March 29th and 30th, buy your tickets now. I would really suggest that. Also, if you love food and you are a foodie, the International Food and Restaurant Show is happening at the Jacob Javits Center on March 3rd, and that's always a great event. So now I am going to share with you my recipe for this week. I created a savory winter stew, and I'm really excited that both of my private clients now are really interested in eating vegan on occasion, at least one day a week. I am getting to cook vegan for them. And so this is a savory winter stew that I cooked up this week. So give me 1 minute while I pull out my glasses because I forgot to pull those out. Okay. Got my glasses. Here we go. Savory winter stew. This is the ingredient list. You're going to start with one onion. Sorry. Yeah, well, we don't need an oven for this recipe. Just the stovetop. One onion cut in half and then sliced into crescent moons. 3 carrots. You can cut them either into rounds or into chunks. I liked cutting them into chunks. 3 parsnips, also cut into chunks or rounds. 1 small head of broccoli cut into bite-sized flowerettes. 2 burdock roots. Now, burdock roots can be all different sizes. 2 burdock roots that are about 10 inches long, I would say. And you're going to scrub them really well. I don't peel my burdock root. And then you chop them into fine little julienne strips. And you'll see in the recipe, but I actually recommend you boiling them first in enough water just to cover them so that they can get soft, because they take a long time, and we want to move the stir fry through a little quicker. So while I'm starting to stir fry my other vegetables, I'm boiling the burdock root, but I don't waste that water. That water is really delicious water, so that water will get added into the recipe. Do not worry. So 3 cups of butternut squash cut into small cubes. So depending on the size of the butternut squash, usually it's less than a whole butternut squash. 1/2 napa cabbage, and you're going to chop that also into fine strips. 2 to 3 portobello mushrooms, also depending on how much you like them and how big they are. 1 bok choy. I use 1 can of cannellini beans. And as I always mention, my favorite brand, if I'm buying canned beans, is Eden brand, because it is the only one out there that uses kombu in cooking the beans. And that helps with the digestion a lot. And everyone around you will be really thankful that you picked that brand. 1 cup of cherry tomatoes cut in half. 1 1/2 tablespoons grated ginger. 1 1/2 tablespoons chopped garlic. Feel free to use more of that if you like. I usually do. Olive oil, just to saute. 3 tablespoons of tamari. Also, you may use more if you'd like. 1 tablespoon tahini. 1 tablespoon dark sesame oil. 2 tablespoons aji marin, which is a sweet rice cooking wine. Not to be mistaken with a Kikkoman brand that they call mirin. If you look at the ingredients of Kikkoman mirin, it is really glucose water, just sugar water, and it's not the real thing. So again, Eden brand makes the best one out there. 2 tablespoons good tasting nutritional yeast. This is different than baker's yeast. Good tasting nutritional yeast I use a lot in my cooking. It's very high in B vitamins, which is hard for vegetarians to sometimes get. And it is also wonderful for making sauces. I even sprinkle it on popcorn. It kind of makes a delicious flavor, kind of like smart corn. It's really good. So good tasting nutritional yeast. And then if you like spice, you can either add red pepper flakes or hot sesame oil at the end of this dish. So set your burdock root into a small saucepan, cover it with just enough water, and set that to boil. And once it starts boiling, lower it and let it simmer for 15 minutes. And while that's happening, cover the bottom of a wok with oil. And when the oil's hot, add the onions, the butternut squash, the carrots, and the parsnips. Those are all the root vegetables. And you always start with the root vegetables because they take the longest. And when you're stir frying, the goal is to have everything come out at the same time. Perfectly cooked. So start with your root vegetables. And then once they are starting to get soft, about 5 minutes or so, you can add your garlic and ginger. Continue cooking at about a medium-high heat for about another 5 minutes. Then add the broccoli, the bok choy, the napa cabbage, and the mushrooms. And depending on the size of your wok, you might need to do this in batches. And you can. You can actually cook the root vegetables till they're just about finished, remove them, and then put in the greens, because the greens cook down a lot. And if you try to put it all in at once, sometimes it's just too burdensome. So I take out the root vegetables and then start all over again with my greens and then add the root vegetables back in, and that works really well. Once the greens have cooked down, you can add the beans and the tomatoes. Then you can add the burdock root with the water. At that point, you probably don't have very much water left in the burdock root pan. You certainly won't have more than a cup. And you add that into the stir fry, but check the burdock root first and make sure that it's already soft or just a little crunch to it. And you add that into the wok. Then you can add the nutritional yeast, the tamari, the sesame oil, the mirin, and the tahini. And that's all of your other flavoring. And that really creates a really nice sauce and brings it all together. The tahini, you're only adding 1 tablespoon. That's just giving a little thickness to the sauce. And the nutritional yeast does that too. So it gives it a little body. So it's a little bit thicker than just a water sauce. And that's it. You know, let all the flavors come together. Cook for about 5 minutes until the vegetables are all perfectly cooked. And again, if you would like to add a little more tamari or a little more red pepper flake or hot sesame oil, you can do that at this time. And that is it. I hope you all enjoy it. Please send me some feedback. I'd like to know how people are enjoying my recipes, and you can do that at bhavani@ieatgreen.com. And right now you're listening to Bhavani at I.E. Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm very happy to introduce to you now my guest for today, Betsy Davison. She is the new editor for Edible Long Island, and we are finally joining over 70 other edible magazines across the country. There has been Edible East End, there has been Edible Brooklyn, and is there also an Edible Manhattan?
There's an Edible Manhattan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now there's going to be an Edible Long Island. So I'm really happy to have her on with us. Betsy has years of experience as a freelance writer. She's also a horticulturist and a gardener. She is a passionate mother, grandmother, home gardener, farmer, and chef. And she helped to spearhead our local community garden, the Gateway Community Garden, which I know you've heard me talk about many times. And over the past three summers now, I thought so. She's run the children's program at the community garden, which is really kind of the lifeblood of the garden. Because when the kids come out, the parents come out. And you know how kids just bring things alive, and their spirit is just so innocent and beautiful, and watching them experience growing vegetables is just a remarkable thing. And so Betsy has really brought her love of children, love of farming, and love of food into the garden. Her husband, Brad, is actually a local bayman or a clam person. So her connection to the local fishermen and farmers markets, as you know, has gone deep, and she's really been connected to local producers for a long time. So she's the perfect candidate to take up this new project. So welcome, Betsy.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell us first why it's taken so long for Long Island to get an edible magazine?
I think what really spearheaded Edible Long Island finally coming to be was the Long Island Small Farm Summit. This past spring, I think it's in its third year, isn't it?
We've had two.
Two. Okay. So last year was the first year that my publishers, who also publish Edible Brooklyn and Manhattan and East End, went to it and were speaking at it, and apparently were somewhat blown away by the interest in the local food movement by suburban Long Islanders. I think it was, maybe everybody just thought we all shopped at the local supermarkets and didn't care. But all along the LIE, from Queens to the Riverhead, you know, to Riverhead area, there's been a really upswelling of interest in the story of your food, where it comes from, who grows it, who produces it, who sells it, who brews the beer, who makes the wine, who grows the grapes, the whole story.
Right.
And I actually was interested in it starting it about 5 years ago, and it took about this long to really have it all come together. The timing was right, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I mean, as you know, one of the co-chairs for Slow Food Huntington and my own business, I Eat Green, it really felt like it was missing. I mean, mm-hmm. I would always pick up the edible magazines whenever I was in the East End or in Brooklyn, and I was like, why don't we have one? You know, it just makes so much sense. And the Small Farm Summit, I was so involved in helping put it together. It really warmed my heart too, mm-hmm. to see so much interest in our local food movement. And I do agree that the timing is right, and it's just really exciting. So when do we expect to have our first publication?
The first print edition should be available this fall. We hoped it was going to be a little sooner. Honestly, I do believe the storm sort of pushed us back a little bit. Obviously, the main thing we need to get is advertising. Uh-huh. As nice as a magazine it is, it has to get paid for. So we're just getting our advertising together now. So the print edition, working backwards, print edition should be available in the fall. We're trying to get a digital edition up this summer. And our website with a lot of blogs should be live around March 1st. We do have social media, Facebook and Twitter. I think we have 302 people who like us right now. So, which was just very exciting. You know?
Yeah.
First it was me, you know, one, and now we're up to 302.
Right.
So we're posting every day, you know, just the whole variety of what the story of what we eat. You know, every day there's something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was about a Kickstarter project. Working with Conzella's Hops out on the East End to help them purchase this German piece of equipment, which is going to help local hop growers harvest the hops. And it's a specific piece of equipment, and in order to get it, it costs money. So that was yesterday's post was to, you know,
Kickstarter.
A Kickstarter project. We've had posts about, you know, bakeries and, you know, events at the Cinema Arts Center. They had an interesting event 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago it was on Lord of the Rings trilogy. They had a marathon, and what was interesting to me was it between episodes 2 and 3 or 1 and 2, whatever it was, they had a restaurant that provided food, and you were actually tasting the food that is somewhat featured in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, really?
And to me that's just another piece of the story of what you eat. You know, you see these movies and the elves are eating elvish bread or whatever it is, different roots and things.
Uh-huh.
And this restaurant was going to serve it, and fosters the people thinking about what it is that they eat rather than just taking it for granted. There's
and creativity and and having fun with it.
Right. It's not just all, you know, Edible Long Island is not just farmers markets and community gardens and things like that. It's everything. It's beer. It's wine. It's what, you know, they eat in Middle Earth. You know,
right. That's great.
It's a lot.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about your background, how you came to be the garden manager over at the Gateway Community Gardens, and what are the plans for that garden as well for this summer?
It's been an evolution for over 20 years now. I started working in retail, you know, working and managing at a retail nursery in Huntington. And I went from that, I went into wholesale. And then from that, I did some work for customers, you know, side customers. And little by little, I got away from growing impatiens and geraniums and perennials and things like that. And strictly growing at home, only things I could eat. I mean, I literally took up beds that had perennials, dug them up, gave some away, and just started planting only things I can eat, which I happen to find attractive looking. I think a tomato plant in a tomato cage is a really attractive thing. Plus,
me
it
too.
Feeds us.
Right, right.
So little by little, I got away from that. And then one day, I lived down the street from Gateway Community Gardens. I saw a sign go up, and it got my attention. I said, trees came down in this lot that had been neglected for many years. And I saw a sign and kind of poked around on the internet and got connected with Francis Whittlesey, who's the executive director of LICAN, Long Island Community Agriculture Network, and asked, you know, just wanted to get involved. It was a couple blocks from my home, and it spoke to me. So we got, I did a little, you know, outreach with her and volunteered, literally, like helping build the beds.
Right. I was there,
I did a little.
Uh-huh.
It was a hot day.
Uh-huh.
I did a little, but I, you know, I did help. And then they needed...
It's a great, you know, a great project, a great community project. Brings people together.
Well,
it was just
one
so
day
nice.
I came home after, at some point on a hot Saturday, sometime in July, and it was hot, and I came home to my husband, and I said, I know it sounds corny, but I was really feeling the Huntington Station love. I mean, it was a Saturday morning, and it was just, it felt like the place to be. Everybody was there. People were, you know, all shapes, sizes, colors, you know, socioeconomic groups were coming down, and they were working their gardens, each one working their beds, but they were sharing tips or recipes or just, you know, local chat. And it was a thing I hadn't felt before, honestly, in Huntington Station.
Sure.
And it really has brought the community together. And that right a block away is an elementary school that was closed because people in the larger community thought were concerned about the crime. And one point somebody asked me, was I afraid working, working at this garden? I was there by myself. And the only thing I could come to my mind was that the worst thing that was going to happen to me at Gateway Community Gardens was a sunburn. I didn't give it a thought. And there's never been 3 years. We've already completed three seasons. There's never been a problem. There's the occasional, missing eggplant. But honestly, I think that would happen in any community garden.
Right.
We don't have a gate.
And we just need to grow enough so that someone who needs an eggplant
they
can take an eggplant.
They must have been hungry.
Exactly. I feel like that with even when animals get into my garden, it's like, I just need to grow enough so that they can have a little too. Because that's just the way it's going to be. You can't, rabbit's a rabbit.
Exactly.
You're going to go in there.
Right.
And,
well, we don't have a gate. So, it's not a community garden. In some urban settings, they have keys and they're gated and only gardeners can come in. Ours is open. Anybody, you don't have to be a gardener to walk in there and just walk up and down the aisles and see everything, whatever is growing. And it's fascinating. And it's so impressive because we started off with, I think, 87 beds. Of those, 24 were set aside smaller beds for children. And then there's six special needs beds, which are up higher, which are, for wheelchairs or people who have back
which is
issues,
so
can't
great.
Bend.
Yep.
They're phenomenal. And then we built another 20-something this year. And there's still more room to expand. And after the first year, and it was just beds, now we have a beautiful mural that was done by...
I don't know the artist's name either. But
it is
a beautiful mural.
And it really tells the story of what goes on in the
And that
garden.
Was a project. The children helped paint that, right?
The
artist.
Children and other gardeners and people just honestly walking down the street pitched in and spent a day. Some people spent an hour. Some people spent 3 weeks coming every day and helping. And it was... It was just another, demonstration of community spirit there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, honestly, this experience at the gardens for the past 3 years is what has made me feel really ready to tackle Edible Long Island.
Mm-hmm. And the thing also about that mural is it really lays out the planting and harvesting season.
Yeah,
it's a useful tool. Exactly. It's like, okay, you can look at that mural and go, okay, I should be planting my, garlic now. Or I should be planting my collards now.
Right. It tells you what to plant from seed, what to plant from cutting, and when to plant it, when to harvest it.
Right. So it's really a wonderful,
it has no words.
Beautiful, colorful tool.
There's no words. So if you don't speak English, you can just look at it and it's all in pictures.
And how does your husband's work as a Bayman affect or inform your experience now?
Well, it's somewhat, he's a clammer, works out on Long Island Sound, and somewhat, in some ways, it's a very old-fashioned kind of way of making a living. I mean, he goes out every day and never really knows what he's going to be able to come back with, whether, the weather can change, he can have a great day, it could be a beautiful, sunny day in Huntington, and out on the water, it's blowing, and he's ending up with nothing. So it's kind of real bare bones,
work hard.
Yeah, literally like digging and clawing, literally to get food.
Uh-huh.
And it's
and it comes out of Huntington Bay.
Well, you can get them in parts of Huntington Bay. He digs out on Long Island Sound in deep water. So Huntington Bay has areas that sometimes after a big storm would have to be closed because of runoff.
Right.
He digs out on the Long Island Sound in deep water. So honestly, I don't think it's ever closed. But he travels, he spends money on gas getting out to where he goes clamming.
Uh-huh.
And, on a good day, he comes home with a lot of clams and a lot of them we will sell to local restaurants, which just warms my heart that there's restaurants who love to buy from, the clammer. That's as fresh as you're going to. When clams get delivered to a restaurant and they're still actually wet, you're not going to get anything else coming into a restaurant unless they have a little herb garden in the back that's going to be any fresher than that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they go from the boat to his truck to right, literally one is down the street from where he keeps his boat. So it's particularly satisfying. There are days in the summertime where our garden, I've picked zucchini or tomatoes or something like that, and he'll come home with clams or on a kind of a fun day, like a fish. you know, that he's sort of a bycatch, something he saw a school of fish running and he's caught something. And we actually eat, you know, it's like the original hunters and gatherers, you know. Fish and vegetables from the garden. It's like, wow, does it get any better than this? It feels like free food.
Right.
And
right.
It tastes good.
Right. Although it's a labor of love.
Yes, I mean, well, right.
As a as a gardener myself, I have developed such an appreciation for the work that it takes to grow good food.
Oh yeah, it's
you know, it's a labor of love.
Right, from prepping the beds at the beginning of the season and getting the, you know, the compost and just turning them and all of that work, honestly, you know, the harvest is the easy part. It's the prep and then the post-season, you know, putting the gardens to bed for the season. That's the real hard work.
Right.
There's nothing more relaxing than watering your vegetable garden in the morning, I think.
I agree. Let's take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, I want to go back into edible magazines and talk more about what they do in servicing our local communities. Okay?
Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm very happy to be here with Betsy Davidson. She is the new editor for Edible Long Island, which is scheduled to come out in their first hard issue in the fall.
September.
Mm-hmm. But they are already on Facebook and already getting active. So, I guess one of my questions is what has been the success of the edible magazines, and why in this climate where so many magazines are struggling, what is their niche and what is their success rate? I mean, they are obviously so successful. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I think the timing is perfect. You know, a lot of the magazines you see, the glossy kind of magazines, are almost dumbing down the readers. You know, the editorial pieces are shorter, a lot of ads. The entire content of all of the edible magazines is very specific to the neighborhood you live in, to the community. It's the parent company is Edible Communities, and it's all about being very specific to your own local community. I mean, we have an Edible Brooklyn and an Edible Manhattan, Edible East End, and all three of those are very different from one another and will be very different from Edible Long Island because each community is completely different. I mean, the restaurants and the markets that you have in Brooklyn are not what you have out on Long Island. We don't have any slaughterhouses on Long Island. They do in Brooklyn. It's just a completely different market, and it speaks to what's down the street from you. And the whole point of the local food movement is to read a local piece, you know,
right,
about the farm that's down the street, or the questions that you have, you know, how come there's, you know, can you buy local mushrooms? You know, can you buy local cheeses? Where can you get the freshest eggs? You know, where can you buy, I was looking into where you could buy chicken wings the other day before the Super Bowl. You know, where you can buy chicken wings anywhere, but where can you buy chicken wings made with local chickens on Long Island? And there are places you can do that.
Really?
Between the Queens border and Riverhead.
Right.
You know, you can go and get fresh or get, you know, free range chickens with no antibiotics. You don't have to go and you know, you don't have to settle. You know, you can branch out.
Right.
And the advertising is all local. We do have some national advertisers. Whole Foods is one. But the advertisers are down the street in the town next door.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why it's there. I think they're probably adding 10 titles a year. We're up to 70.
Right.
I think it's about 70 in Edible Communities. And there's a reason for that.
And is it the same publishers for all of them?
No. Edible Long Island is going to be published by the publishers that publish East End, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. So it's sort of a big family now.
Uh-huh.
And that's one publisher. There are others that I think have, you know, publishers that publish.
So different regions have
exactly.
different publishers.
Exactly. And some are complete. And all the editors and publishers come from so many different backgrounds, and they're such interesting people. And some are, you know, some people wear both hats, editor and publisher. Others are, you know, groups of people are the publishers, and somebody's the editor. And it's a community of, you know, very specific communities.
Now, I notice Edible magazines, they don't do restaurant reviews.
No.
Can you tell me why?
We don't do restaurant reviews because I would imagine that the main reason is that they sometimes need to be critical. You know, we celebrate food. We celebrate the local restaurants. And we don't do a story on a restaurant unless there's a story there. Just because it has great food, we're more interested in the back of the house story. You know, something interesting to a diner. You know, like, why is that chef? You know, where did he come from? You know, sort of maybe a dollar and a dream story is interesting. You know, obviously of particular interest are chefs that source out their, you know, food from local, you know, get their eggs locally, you know, things like that. But we there's you're not going to find any critiques of restaurants.
Right.
It's well, all celebratory.
I know slow food, many slow food chapters have something called the snail of approval, which is, you know, slow food's way of going in and looking at the restaurant from a critical standpoint,
uh-huh.
saying
uh-huh.
how much of the items on their menu are seasonal, how many of the ingredients are locally sourced,
mm-hmm.
How many are natural or organic, and that kind of thing. And I know my partner and I in Slow Food Huntington, we've haven't done it because we've explored many restaurants and there are so few that would meet
right.
that criteria in our region. Do you think having an edible Long Island might increase restaurants' awareness to try to meet the criteria of the public that wants to read Edible Long Island?
Oh, I certainly hope so. I would imagine it is. You know, I run into quite a few people who have never heard of it, heard of Edible Long Island. You know, they might have seen Edible East End or, they don't know the Edible brand. And when they actually hold it in their hand, you know, you get a couple of naysayers like, oh, she's going to be editor of a magazine, you know, a little dubious because of the way the financial climate is. Starting a magazine now, that's crazy. And then when they actually see it and hold it in their hand and leaf through it, and they're like, wow, this is a really good magazine. And I think that restaurateurs who are not, you know, aware of it now, once they become aware of it, will see the you know, I hate to use the word movement, but that's what it is. It's a movement towards eating locally, local seasonal foods, you know, knowing where your food comes from, the story of your food.
Right. Because one thing that you look to for edible magazines, I think anyway, is looking for restaurants that would advertise
mm-hmm.
in there because they uphold a certain standard. And being from Long Island, I think there are very few restaurants that are going to meet that criteria. And I'd love to think that more restaurants are going to change and adapt those principles so that they could advertise in there. But my question is, do you think some of them will advertise in there because they think it's a new trend, but they're not really going to be true to what the edible brand is supposed to stand for?
I hope not. I mean, I would like to, you know, there's a need, obviously an important need for advertising. But I would like to think that we can kind of curate it a little bit more and have, you know, as much as we can and certainly encourage, you know, advertisers to go the route of these other restaurants that are even, you know, a few. I actually have seen restaurants that sell, my husband sells clams to some restaurants. I've gone to the backs, literally the back of the house and in the back behind the restaurant, and seen some restaurants growing like their own basil in like old spackle buckets and stuff, just so they can run out and snip a couple of fresh basil leaves. And it's a start. It's a small start, but it's definitely a start in the chef appreciating the value of fresh basil. You know, basil any other way just isn't the same to me. Another thing about restaurants is when it comes to edible communities, when you're traveling edible communities as a whole is a great resource. If you're traveling up to Boston, if you've become familiar with edible Brooklyn or Manhattan, or hopefully edible Long Island, and you're out of town, you're in Florida or you're up in Boston or something, you could pick up a copy and you can leaf through it and see that the restaurants that are advertised in there, or the, you know, cheese shops or the breweries are, you know,
they have a certain standard.
Exactly.
Well, that's why I'm asking you, because I do use that as a resource when I go places. And I know, I don't know the East End that well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know some of the farms out there, but if I'm out there visiting a farm and I want to go to a restaurant, I very often will look at that magazine.
Absolutely.
And so I wonder what restaurants are going to be in it in our local area, because I am in that area and I would love to look for restaurants. You know, I search all the time, you know, local restaurants for vegan or vegetarian or
they're starting
natural.
To pop up. I would, there's little places, you know, places that have like six tables, you know, but they're, you know, kind of like they've been the unsung heroes. And I think that, you know, Edible Long Island will give them a voice and hopefully inspire others to sort of begin to follow. I don't want to call it a trend because that seems as though it's faddish and will
it's
run
not
its
faddish.
Course. It's not.
It's absolutely not.
A movement is a better phrase.
And the reason we have this movement, and, you know, just for everyone listening out there, please become part of this movement. And chances are, if you're listening, you already are part of the movement. Because our food supply, and this is what makes me crazy, people don't realize our food supply is being controlled by big corporations like Nestle and Monsanto, and it is not being controlled by the farmer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there's been so much hoopla about that advertisement from the Super Bowl. I mean, I wasn't watching the Super Bowl, so I didn't see it from firsthand, but I did get the link sent to me by thousands of other people. And you look at that beautiful picture of the American farmer. And of course, that's not really what the American farmer looks like these days. But it was just a beautiful, with Paul Harvey?
Paul Harvey, yeah.
Yeah. A beautiful description of, you know, God creating the farmer, because there was so much that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And I would love to think that that's how our food was being grown, and it used to be. And people don't realize the change that's taken place in this country over the years in our food supply without the permission of the public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Europe, the politicians, the people who were making those decisions, were thinking of their constituents, their citizens, before profit and corporations, and made much better decisions to keep the food pure and not genetically modified and free of a lot of the chemicals and fertilizers. And because the society was so much older, they were doing it already for so long and it was working, they didn't need to mess with it.
It wasn't broken.
And, you know, it wasn't necessarily broken here either. It was just that big corporations got in and, you know, they had these leftover chemicals from Vietnam and had to figure out what can we do with these chemicals. So, oh, let's put them on our food. What a great idea. You know, and you know, and they're now developing a new, you know, stronger pesticides, because the old pesticides are, you know, mutating new pests that are...
They've become resistant to the old ones.
Right, so they're putting stronger pesticides on. Agent Orange is now coming into the playing field. And it's just, is there an end in sight? It doesn't look like it. And that's why, you know, when I talk about people needing to take to the streets, when I was talking at the beginning about jumping on a bus and going to Washington for the Keystone Pipeline. I mean, we all need to take these issues really to heart and become advocates and aware and join the movements of good food and good environmental practices and take back our planet from corporate profit, because that's just not what's most important. And, you know, sorry, I'm sorry I went off on a tangent.
It was an important tangent.
But it's, you know, it's, so my question, going back to my question, it was like, will there be restaurants between Queens and Riverhead, do you think, that will be able to
there already are
edible standards?
As I said, they might be very small little places, but Edible Long Island will be their voice.
Uh-huh.
And we will be telling the stories of, I mean, there are places now that you can go and you can get eggs that are, you know, right off the farm. And, you know, those are the stories we're going to be telling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wine, beer, cheeses, eggs.
Well, the other thing I love about edible is that you can actually help make those connections, because if a restaurant wants to be more sustainable and they don't know, you know, everyone's so busy, you mm-hmm. know, and they don't know where to source these things. If they can make a connection through the edible magazine, is, oh, I can get eggs right here mm-hmm. in the next town over. Mm-hmm. I had no idea, you know, and so it gives a voice and a place for locals to advertise with each other.
Exactly.
And make those connections. And that's what I think so exciting about the
It is
future.
Exciting.
Uh-huh. So what kind of stories, you know, besides the restaurants, do you really hope to get into our first
publications? Well, one of the stories that we as I said, we don't even have a print edition out yet, but one of the biggest, most exciting stories that we've had on Long Island of late is since the storm, since Sandy, 8 of the larger breweries on Long Island have pooled their resources together. Literally, they brought ingredients to the table and they created Sandy Relief Beer, which was 8 breweries, one of which is Barrier Brewing Company in Oceanside, which was basically wiped out by the storm. And the proceeds from the sale of this beer are going to help Barrier Brewing rebuild, and then going to other charities on Long Island, helping Long Islanders that have been, you know, affected by the storm. And it was such an amazing collaboration of basically what you would imagine are competitors. And they literally all brought these ingredients together, and they brewed the beer. They released it about 3 weeks ago now. It had like a little launch.
Oh, that's
great.
I hadn't heard of that.
It's there's a website, sandyreliefbeer.com. I think it's on the there's a Facebook page too. It's on our Facebook page. And it was just such a place is sold out within hours of the beer. They released it to brew pubs and a couple of restaurants, and a couple of beer distributors were selling it in 22-ounce bottles. And I think there's still some. I can find out. I'll put it on our Facebook page if it's still available. But it was just this kind of warm and fuzzy movement of, you know, it just made
That's beautiful.
It made Edible
yeah.
Long Island really feel like this is why we're doing this, because
and
it had
know,
a purpose.
When tragedies happen, or, you know, issues happen and mm-hmm. people come together, mm-hmm. it's that human spirit
yeah.
that is so... You know what brings tears to me, you know, it's just that human spirit of people coming together without the competition, because, you know, there is enough business out there for all of us.
Yeah.
And when we work together, I mean, you know, I see that a lot in the good food movement. You know, I wish there was more collaboration happening. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things the slow food movement has really been talking about. Partnering with mm-hmm. other organizations and collaborating so that we can really move forward. Because if we all keep doing the same thing, we have, you know, 20 organizations doing the same
right.
thing, as opposed to pooling our resources, we can really catapult ourselves forward and make a much bigger impact.
What's
on
that
the movement.
All for one for all kind of
Buddhist.
Yeah. And what's their phrase is rebuilding Long Island with beer. And to me, any groups coming together to help rebuild is an awesome story. But I got to tell you, because it's a story about beer, it makes it even more of a fun, awesome story. It's
uh-huh.
It was my husband and I went to the night where they, you know, tapped the keg and everybody, you know, had a glass. And it was just a real coming together of,
yeah.
as I said, businesses that you would assume are competing with one another.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's kind of old timey, and everybody, neighbors helping neighbors for a cause.
Yeah.
It was one of the stories that told me that this was the right, you know, Edible Long Island is the right thing to happen now. You know, whether will we have stories like that in the future? I hope so. But it's to me, it's an ongoing tale, you know.
Yeah, I hope so. Although I hope it's
beer.
Not with lots more horrible.
No.
catastrophe.
Right.
Climate change catastrophe.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, working together
yeah.
for, you know, saving properties that are,
uh-huh.
you know, that kind of thing, that, you know, Long Islanders helping Long Islanders is, you know, it's a real feel good, warm and fuzzy kind of thing. So I think a lot of people don't think that that's what goes on out here. You know, we're just everybody sort of doing their own thing, you know.
And that's why I'm so excited about this Edible Long Island also, because, you know, the slow food movement on Long Island, you know, it is a struggle sometimes because everyone is so busy and we're all so hidden. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's many of us that are in this good food movement.
Right.
But we're so spread out. It's not a tight, close-knit community. Mm-hmm. We're really spread out. And so things like slow food and Edible Long Island and Healthy Planet, you know, all these things that bring people together around good food is really more needed. So why don't you share with us how people get in touch with the Facebook page and you and
our Facebook page is Edible Long Island, simple as that. So we have 302 at last count likes. One of the things I was
hopefully after today you'll have many more.
Hopefully, one of the things I was concerned about when this idea first sort of came to fruition was, oh, I'm gonna have to find writers, photographers, and you know, how am I going to find all these people? I haven't had to look for anybody. The right people have come to me, and they're phenomenal people. I mean, anything I've read that has been submitted for the blog, which is going to be going up March 1st, just blows me away how talented the, you know, like the cream rising to the top, how talented these people are, photographers, writers. Just every day I hear from people who want to be involved, and they don't want to be involved just on a surface kind of way. They really want to be involved. You know, they're very passionate about it. And you realize that they're out there on Long Island. You know, it's not what everybody thought it was for a long time.
Right.
And really the cream is rising to the top, and it's to me is showing the best face of Long Island right now.
Right. And that's what the Small Farm Summit did too.
Exactly.
And, we actually next week have a planning meeting to start planning for the next Small Farm Summit, which we're going to skip 2013 mm-hmm. and go into 2014 and start planning it now. And hopefully we can actually make it a 2-day event this year because it's, you know, we just had such phenomenal response.
Right. Well, and from that, basically, sort of was the birth of Edible Long Island. I mean, though it was a couple of years, kind of simmering, mm-hmm. it's now ready. Time is now.
Right. Well, I'm sure you'll be involved in the next Small mm-hmm. Farm Summit.
I'm sure I will be.
And for everybody out there who's been listening, we are so thrilled to have had you, and we will be with you again next Thursday. As I said, I will be up at Columbia Teachers College next Thursday, and so I will be speaking to you from there, and I look forward to that. And you've been listening to me today with my guest, Betsy Davison, who's the new publisher of Edible Long Island, and you can find them at Edible Long Island on Facebook, and stay tuned for more action. And have a great day. And I'll see you next week. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network.